Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter. I'm joined around the mic by Cheryl Lindemann, Maricela Garza, your cattle collection development team. Hey, how you doing?
Good. Very well. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So this episode, it's book award season for librarians.
That's a big deal.
It's a really big deal to us. So we're talking the ALA Youth Media Awards and the codes lists, and we'll explain a little bit more about what all that is as we're getting going.
Yeah.
You want to?
So the ALA Youth Media Awards, that would be the American Library Association Youth Media Awards. These are awards given to not just books, but to videos and books that are on audio too, that sort of thing. But they are primarily books, is my best view of it. Really, these awards are recognized worldwide, not just by librarians in our country, but all over the world, as being very high-quality books. There's a ton of different awards. The most notable ones are the ones that most people think of would be like the Newbery Award, which is usually a J-fiction type of book, or the Caldecott Medal Award that is honoring an illustrator for a book. And then, of course, Coretta Scott King Book Awards. And I want to say, too, that, you know, the medal books are outstanding. But there's also usually a whole list of honor books that are really terrific as well. So I don't know that any authors and illustrators are listening to us, but congratulations to all of you.
Certainly.
And thank you for participating in the world of Kids Lit, especially just giving us such great material to read and illustrations to work with.
And the interesting thing about all of this, we talked in a previous episode about the Carnegie winners, and it's cool actually to look back at the lists and the honor lists and the winners, because we've talked about so many of them already in previous podcasts. They were the books that caught our eye.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself is interesting. I mean, the quick examples would be, I talked about Watercress, which was the Caldecott winner.
Yes, you did.
And we've all, Catalyst invested a bit of time and energy into the Michigan notable Firekeeper's Daughter, which
I was just going to say that is the Prince winner.
There's a lot of titles.
A lot of Michigan pride there.
Yes, very much. So we'll kind of talk more about it as we're going, but it's been fascinating to kind of look through these lists and realize how many of those we've actually already read or talked about.
Right. I'm going to start out with the Newbery Award winner. It is The Last Cuentista, and this is by Donna Barbara Higuera. Wow. it is a science fiction sort of dystopian, all is gloom and doom sort of story, which again, I don't usually read those kind of books.
You keep saying that, but you're doing
it. Either adult or kids, but lately they've just been popping up on places. I'm like, well, I really should take a look at that. Wow, I've really, really enjoyed that book. This is a book about a family in New Mexico, and the year is like 2061. and this family of four, which includes two scientist parents, are on their way to a ship of some kind that's going to take them 400 years into the future because something is going to happen to planet Earth and no one's going to survive. And a select few have been selected, to get on the ship. And it's really kind of bleak in some ways. I definitely want to say that it's kind of like grade 5 and above, unless you have a kid who maybe is really mature, because a lot of the things that are kind of alluded to in the story are scary and makes you think a lot about even our own culture and society, about just being asked to think the same way and to kind of like beat your way up to the front. And I hate those thoughts. But anyway, this is what's included. You get on the ship. You get to be placed into this pod when you're filled with this gel so that you'll be able to handle the 400-year speed into the future. You've got this, you know, the whole inside of the ship has, like, been created to sort of mimic Earth in some ways. There's trails and movie theaters and all these things that you think of as family fun. But what happens is our main character, Petra, she actually doesn't really fall asleep. She's sort of awake a little bit, and she gets to hear about what is actually the plan. In the end, there is like this, what they call the collective, and it's a group that has decided to abandon the original plan to go off to planet Sagan in order to promote a more robotic way of living, I guess you could say. Where everyone is the same, everyone falls in line. There's a kind of a groupthink that everyone has to submit to. No physical qualities that are considered defective are accepted. But the real story here, one of the things that I really liked about it, is that there's a lot of Spanish that's sort of interspersed. And Petra, it's really sad because she's had to leave her grandmother behind. Her grandmother is like this folktale storyteller. And what Petra really wants is to be able to become a storyteller like her grandmother. And her parents are, of course, like, you know, pushing her towards the sciences and that sort of thing. But I really liked just all these images of stories that, you know, I have been familiar with, but not too familiar with, like folktales, Spanish folktales. There's also lots of shout outs to authors, and the book Dreamers by Yuyi Morales is kind of inserted in there. It's just a really interesting story about how a group of children are asked to submit to this collective of groupthink and how they are going to fight against it. So I really encourage you to read it. Stick with it all the way to the end because it's quite engaging. So.
Very cool.
Wow. That's fantastic. That idea of the Cuentista reminds me of Clarissa Pinkola Estes, the Woman Who Run with the Wolves author, and some of her works about, you know, folk tales and storytelling and the archetypes that are in those stories.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to bring up one of the Alex Awards. And the Alex Awards are given to 10 books written for adults that have special appeal to young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the books that was on my reading list, my towering TBR pile that came out last February that I really wanted to read was actually on the list this year. So I was like, okay, that's moving to the top of my read pile. And one thing that you said, Madi, really strikes a nerve. Similar, this book would probably not be for, it would be a little challenging for a younger teen. It's something that, you know, parents would want to decide upon because it is, is very, the main character lives under very challenging circumstances. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a very sensitive story, really difficult circumstances. But the book is Crossing the Line, A Fearless Team of Brothers and the Sport That Changed Their Lives Forever by Kareem Rosser. And this is a book about a family of kids that live in the Bottoms. The Bottom is in West Philadelphia. And they have had a lot of family struggles, but two of the boys, they have a lot of freedom too, and they love riding their bikes all around. And the older brothers come across a stable in the woods, and they connect with the owner of the stable, who actually runs a program called Work to Ride, who encourages kids from Philly to come and ride. But they have to do lots of things. They have to clean the stalls. They have to clean tack. They get assigned to a horse. They have to come. They have to show up. They have to keep up good grades. There's a lot of rules associated with it. So the older brothers of Kareem Rosser start up in this, and then they bring Kareem in, they bring his sister in, it becomes sort of a family affair. So much that they have a family dream that they're all gonna have this beautiful farm someday, and they're all gonna have all these horses and ride together. But what he realizes is that horses just unlock the anxiety inside of him. It takes a while, he's kind of scared at first, but once he connects with them, it's the one place where he can like breathe. He literally has such bad anxiety that he can't breathe, mm-hmm. that comes through the book. And when he's on the horses, it goes away. He forgets about it.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do they ride, but they learn how to play polo. And he continues on with polo. He and his brother and another young man form the first all-black interscholastic polo team, and they win the interscholastic polo championship. He becomes one of the top polo players in the country. And so it's a story about his coming of age, and how, you know, he ends up going to this military school with all these unique circumstances that end up bringing him there, but how polo and horses are that thread through his life.
Mm-hmm.
And about and his family, some of them end up falling away from the horses, and they end up really getting involved in some really difficult circumstances. And him trying to ride that line where he wants a different path in life, but it's really hard to stay on that path, and he feels like he needs to go back and support his family and sort of that guilt that he has to go through. So it's just a really, really amazing story about his life. He is now an executive director of Work to Ride. There are similar programs across the country. There's Detroit Horsepower, and they also have a polo team. So there's a lot of really excellent groups that are still doing this. And he's really dedicated his adult life to going back and keeping this program going.
Mm-hmm.
And just a really quick line from this one. The only place that fear felt away was at the barn. As soon as I crossed into the warmth, that sweet, funky smell, as soon as I could lay hands on my pony, rest my brow against his neck, and climb up on his back and ride so hard that the memories and panic couldn't keep up, I was free. So a difficult story, but really a beautiful story about a wonderful man, Kareem Rosser. So crossing the line.
Very cool. So again, the Alex Awards, it's that 10 best adult books that appeal to teen audiences. And again, I was happy to see titles that we've talked about before. Another one that was on it was The Light from Uncommon Stars, which we kind of refer to around here as the Donuts and Feeding the Ducks book that I talked to. It's that mashup of science fiction and fantasy and all sorts of deals with devils and violent playing and that sort of thing that I discussed in a previous one. The book that I wanted to pull out, I have never had the opportunity to kind of talk about it here, was actually the first book I read for 2021.
Oh, wow.
And that's Winter's Orbit by Everina Maxwell. It's a... So the premise for this that caught my eye was basically it's described as a really solid science fiction political mystery, but with the feel of Casey McQuiston's Red, White, and Royal Blue. So very serious, dangerous political machinations going on, but the characters up front are... It's an interesting couple that have to figure out how to get around all of this. In it, very early in the book, Keem's brother has been killed. This is important because the brother's marriage was political. The marriage needs to exist for there to be, for all the rest of the treaties to be kept in place, basically. So his, she's what her actual role is, but the head of his family decides that he's going to marry the widower, Janin, and in the hopes of renewing the political bonds. And so this is a character who, he's sort of a playboy. He is smart. He's smart in his way, but he comes off, and this is sort of dating myself and things I've read before, but sort of Bertie Wooster-ish in that he's a little over the top. He comes off as not too bright, but he's just an interesting character, and he's been paired up with this gentleman who is so reserved and so that he can't kind of figure out what's going on. Also, come to find out that there is question as to whether his cousin's death was accidental or murder, and the people who think it's murder think his new husband is the prime suspect. So they're kind of working around this. They've got all these other treaties and problems in the background. But it's just a very well done sci-fi political mystery. It's kind of mashing up almost everything. Sci-fi, politics, a little bit of space opera in action, and a slow burn romance. So it was a really interesting read, and I totally see why it made the Alex list. It does, in the personal relationship style, it has that vibe of the prince and first son relationship in Casey McQuiston's book, too. So I was really impressed.
Cool.
And was glad to see it there. What you got, Maddie?
So I have some books by Corey R. Tabor. This is, he won the Theodore Seuss Geisel Award this year. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with them, this is an award that was established in 2004. So it's not that old of an award.
Right.
But it's basically an award that's meant to honor authors and illustrators of like the ER, or what we call early readers or easy readers in our system. These are very entry-level books. Sometimes you see picture books that are turned into early readers. Mm-hmm. They're usually little rectangular, skinny books. And the book that won this year is Fox at Night. And I will also say that Corey R. Tabor has won previously for this series, too. I can't quite remember what year it was. It was Fox the Tiger that won, I think, maybe in 2019. But if you have ever read any of the Fox series, there's like four of them, I think, they are just beautiful. Beautiful because the illustrations, I mean all wonderful respect to Mr. Tabor, they're just so juvenile in some ways. The color, the watercolors, I mean, it looks almost like a child with all his love came up with the story. And what I really like about these books is that they're really cute, funny stories. Sometimes you read a book and you get to a page that just makes you laugh so loud, and you're just like, I want more, I want more, I want more. But there's only really that one or two pages in the book that just stood out to you as being so funny. And I'm just going to say that page 25 for Fox at Night, you have to check it out. It was, by far the best page, although I will say that page, was it 21 maybe? No, it was actually page, now they don't all have pages, numbers here. Page 16 and 17, that was also a beautiful spread. But it's a fox who is, you know, at various times wanting to change his, you know, who he is, or trying to deal with monsters in this case. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And Corey Tabor also wrote Malfell earlier this year. That's a picture book. And I just read through that again, and beautiful, beautiful book. Kind of not traditional in that you kind of open it a certain way, not the left to right, mm-hmm. but kind of up and down spread. Nice story about the kingfisher bird, and just beautiful, beautiful work. I can't stress enough. And I'm going to say that these early readers, his series is from what they call the My First Shared Reading. This is basic language, word repetition, and whimsical illustrations, which is absolutely the truth here with what you find in the Fox books. It's ideal for sharing with your emergent reader. So
cool.
That's all I'm going to say.
Sounds great. There's another sort of whole category of these. There are a lot more of these awards than you can probably ever imagine, but there is a section that's from the RUSA, the RUSA group. And it's the notable books list, but then there's also the codes list, which is a committee of the collection development and evaluation section, which is related to our jobs here, of the Reference and User Services Association, that's RUSA. And they do a selection of what they call essential cookbooks for public libraries every year. And when their description of this is kind of fun because they mention that, you know, these are cookbooks for using, you know, way into the future. They're just really notable cookbooks, but also for the armchair cookbook reader, which mm-hmm. I think we can all relate to maybe a little bit. You know, you check them out with the dream to sort of dream of what you'll make
yes.
when you retire.
Yes, I do.
Possibly.
I'm feeling a little pointed out here.
Home and it sits yeah. on your coffee table.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And that's actually in the description of the award. Yep. So I think that's great to acknowledge that.
We recognize those readers.
They're like
we are
picture books for adults. We can dream, you know, right. through these books.
And picture sort of like, books for adults.
Yeah, it's sort of like someday I'll have this time and I'm going to make this. So this one is, so we've actually talked about one of the award winners on the podcast before. It was Vegetarian Chinese Soul Food, which mm-hmm. we talked about in a previous episode. But this is another one of those books, the other winner I'd like to talk about that I couldn't get my hands on last year and really wanted to. So I'm really glad we're talking about these today. The title is Flavors of the Sun, The Sahadi's Guide to Understanding, Buying, and Using Middle Eastern Ingredients by Christine Sahadi Whalen. And Sahadi is actually a store, this amazing gourmet foods store that is in Brooklyn, New York. And it's been in the family for over 100 years when her relatives came from Lebanon and started the store. And while it has gourmet foods from all over the world, ingredients, her specialty is Middle Eastern or Arab American specialty foods. And they have, you know, of course, it's a stunning cookbook, but it has a really unique way of presenting the information. It's really educational. It talks about the history of the store with some really fantastic pictures. But then it goes into different types of flavors, five different types of flavors. Then it lists ingredients, Middle Eastern food ingredients that go under those flavors, and then has recipes for each one of those sets of flavors and ingredients. So it's extremely educational. And a couple examples, spicy escarole and beans featuring Aleppo peppers, individual spinach walnut pies. Mm. That one looked really amazing
Ooh,
to me.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, the picture looks really good.
Yeah, absolutely, doesn't it? It just looks so good. It looks doable, you know? It could happen soon, not just when you retire. here's a unique one. Now, some people may not like this, but some may. Tahini swirl brownies. I know you can use tahini like peanut butter. It gives that same sort of salty, nutty. Thought that was very, very cool. And the one that really appealed to me as well was called, here it is, it's coming, orange blossom cupcakes with white chocolate ganache glaze.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, does that sound wonderful?
Yeah, picture's lovely too.
It just looks totally gorgeous. So it's a gorgeous book, really informative, really interesting, and I think very accessible, and something that you could really make these recipes, or just enjoy it for the eye candy that it provides. So, really great one.
Okay, and I think I'm kind of finishing up here. We also, Cheryl mentioned CODES, which is the Collection Development Evaluation section of RUSA, and another one of the awards lists or awards categories, things that they do, which we'll put links to all of these so you can kind of see the range of both in the Youth Media Awards and the CODES Awards, kind of what we're talking about. But one of the lists that I am always looking at each year is called the Reading List, in which it's described as seeking to highlight outstanding fiction in eight genres that merit special attention by general adult readers and librarians who work with them. And the interesting thing about this year's list is, okay, A, the reading is fabulous, but B, I've actually talked about quite a few of the genre winners. I already talked about the fantasy winner, A Master of Gin. Relationship fiction was Gunkel. Romance was One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston. And the science fiction was Psalm for the Wild Built by Becky Chambers. So one I didn't talk about is the adrenaline genre winner, is Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. S.A. Cosby dropped into, this is his second book. He kind of popped onto the landscape full throttle. His first book, Blacktop Wasteland, is sort of it's about a criminal driver, getaway driver, And this next book is, you know, is also full throttle in its own way. It's the Razorblade Tears is the title, and it's brutal. So I feel like the last few books that I've talked about are kind of other than Winter's Orbit, the last few books I've talked about on microphone have been pretty messy. Shoot 'em up type things, because I talked about that Western before, and I've talked about this one. It kind of follows that theme. It starts with the brutal targeted murder of a young interracial gay couple. At first, it's sort of taken as maybe it is just a hate crime type thing, but there's much actually more to it. The fathers of the couple come together at the funeral. Both of them deeply regret the relationships that they had with their sons. It's the homophobia, there's the level of racism. I mean, internally, that they never worked out their differences before this happened. And both of them are ex-cons. Both of them have kind of been in that world. They recognize that there's more going on than just a simple hate crime, if you can say simple. But it becomes a revenge story. But it's deeper than your traditional revenge story, because along the way, they're figuring out what they should have figured out beforehand. They're kind of learning from each other. They're not great guys, but they kind of come together to try and figure out what happened to their children and try to mete out some level of justice and try to learn and do better, because they actually have a grandchild that the son's adopted and that is going to be raised. Oh, and wow. It's sort of figuring out how to move forward. So it's high stake, messy, violent. It's on one hand, it is a crime novel. And then it's also kind of learning about homophobia, learning about racism, and learning, you know, and developing and improving themselves for the future. So it's and Cosby's writing is amazing. It really is. So I would just suggest, he's certainly somebody to watch. He's, you know, he was topped all the list last year. He's topped all the list in 2020. And I'm eagerly waiting to see what he does next. So again, we are going to put the links for a lot of these things in the, well, this is going to be kind of a notes heavy.
Yeah.
We'll put a lot of links and stuff into the notes for this one. Because we referred to a lot of different books that we've already talked about, mm-hmm. but we also, there's so many more awards lists related to the Youth Media Awards and the and the codes, different codes lists. So there's just so much great stuff out there. All right.
Excellent. All right.
Been great talking with you.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. See you next episode.
Okay.